There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on a Friday. We have made it, and lots to do on today's show. Reminder, too, of course, you are a big part of the show. Ways to get in? Yes, there are plenty. Of course, the phone line and the text line, the same, 343-0106. In addition, if you're running the FM Talk 106.5 app that I'm kind of fond of, because, well, it's our app, there's a talkback feature where you'll hit the microphone icon on the front page of the app. Maybe you're streaming the station there or checking out podcasts or whatever. You'll hit that microphone icon. You can record a message, emails it to us, and we play it back here on the air. So check that out. And I guess if you want to be like a Luddite, you can send me an email or a postcard or something like that. And by the way, as we get started with today's show, Calvin says, because as I was wrapping up the end of Jeff's show with him, and he put me on the spot, and he said, what governor did I think would do a better job of hurricane response? You know, it's not fair of Jeff, but I expected. Would it be DeSantis or Ivy? And I said, DeSantis. Calvin says, K. Ivy was just about to come on your show finally, and you went and said that, Sean. So there we go. I don't, after all these years of being denied conversations with the governor, that's obviously the straw that broke the camel's back, Calvin. So I'm sorry. I don't know what I'm doing. All right. Dale Leash on the way later on in the show. Also, Joe Savage from Roads of Hope. But as we get started here on this Friday, I want to talk about an event coming up tonight and introduce you to candidates in the state of Alabama running as that L. You know, you got R's and you got D's and you got L's. What's that all about? Libertarians are on the general election ballot in Alabama for the first time in 20 years. So let's talk about that. Libertarian candidate for governor of the state of Alabama, Dr. Jimmy Blank, and governor or lieutenant governor candidate Ruth Page Nelson in with me, and John Sophocleas, who has been on with us in the past running for Senate. We'll get to his conversation coming up. Welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
This is tonight. First of all, we'll do this several times because it's the radio thing. We tell people, we're going to tell them, we tell them, then we tell them again. So tonight, event coming up here in Mobile at the Cedar Creek Social Club. So Cedar Street Social Club tonight at 5. And y'all can talk into these mics here as well. So
we're being censored from Facebook.
We'll get to that in a second. Yes, yeah. That they're coming after libertarians now on Facebook. But this event tonight coming up 5 o'clock, what's going to happen? Why should somebody come out tonight?
It will give you an opportunity to look at your options. We are the voice and your opportunity for change. The duopoly has literally, in my mind, co-conspired almost to continue things as they have always been in this state. The libertarians are actually your freedom party. We do protect your liberties. We're not just brokering it with big money, lots of signs all over the place, and you don't know, you don't ever see any change. We're here to give you that choice for change. So if you want to come out and hear the platform of our party, that is why you would come.
And I hope that people get this message, because I've talked about this in the past, that it's got to be really tough as a libertarian, because you know, you've got the Republicans and Democrats are all going to give you something or fix some problem for you because the other person did something to you, where libertarians, you're selling liberty. And to some people, that is fantastic. I wish it would be to all of us fantastic, but that some people are like, yeah, well, that's liberty thing. What are you going to give me? What things are you going to give me?
Well, I'm going to give you the opportunity to do what with your life you'd like to do with it. Get out of your way. I mean, let's look at the state of Alabama. Right now, the same big mules that used to run the state of Alabama for their benefit as Democrats have changed jerseys, mm-hmm. and the same folks are now wearing the red jersey in the Republicans. And we're a conservative state. most people in Alabama want less government, not more. Mm-hmm. They want less taxes, not more. But we've, in Alabama, taxes since 2019 during the KIV administration, spending by state governments going up 35%. Spending in the state of Alabama has gone up percentage-wise more than spending increased in California or New York.
Well, wait a second. How's that, Dr. Blake? This is a Republican supermajority state.
Supermajority state.
How is this possible?
And spending has gone up dramatically. There's no tax we don't have. Our neighbors, Florida and Tennessee, have no income tax. Mississippi's phasing theirs out. How are we going to be competitive with our continuing to have the income tax? Nobody, none of our supermajority Republicans are trying to do anything about it. They're increasing spending. They're increasing spending dramatically, more than in the, quote, left-wing states. And, you know, it's something that's got to stop. And that's what we're here to talk about is in education. We were 26th in education when the Republicans before the Republicans got in control. We're now 52nd.
Right.
Somebody's not got their eye on the ball.
Yeah, and I want to, you know, Ruth Page Nelson running for lieutenant governor. Tell me a little history too, why the ballot access issues, right, that we've talked about before, these things, this duopoly that you mentioned. How did that work, and what had to be overcome to have this, you know, big slate of libertarians on the ballot in November?
Well, there was a big effort to get out, and we got about 80,000 signatures to overcome, to meet the requirement for, and to make sure that we qualified with all good signatures so that we could be on the ballot. That was a huge effort that cost probably $250,000 or around $300,000, just getting people to sign on. But as people were approached, they were looking for an option. They were happy to know that we were putting this before them, because as Dr. Blake was saying, this government is really being run like a communist operation. He didn't say that, but I'm saying it. In my mind, we're being run more like a communist operation where you don't have a choice. You have not been given choices. Although you're sold on conservatism and Christianity, you're given overt spending, your ability to start businesses for the free market, just even to farm. I've got people calling me saying, hey, I bought a 10-acre farm and I found out I can't put cows on it anymore. We need to register your private gardens now with the, you know, our state has the capability of having all of those things that are promoted as Christianity and self-sustainability. However, the government has taken those from us in ways that we don't notice it. So we have our Democrats who, like a Richard Shelby, ran as a Democrat, tell all of the black people vote Democrat, and then sworn in as a Republican. Mm-hmm. Now his seat is being just moved on to Katie Britt. And what has Katie Britt done for the people who voted to get these people in? The Democrats have no idea that they have to be more attuned to what they're voting for, the people they're voting for. And as a libertarian, I bring that to the table. We bring you a real option. I'm looking at the things that need to be changed. I am a mother. I am an African-American woman. I have put a lot of time on the ground to understand the real issues. And just the setup, like how Don Siegelman, how that all took place, how the governor changed over, and these conservative Christians that have been in power have sold this idea, but it's the furthest thing from my idea of Christianity. So we need to understand the truth about what we're looking to achieve in our own lives, our autonomy, and realize that it's been taken from us, but it's being sold by the media and by big businesses as something that you would want. When you look at it, you really would not want this.
Jimmy, I would respond to what Bruce said there. Yeah, because...
Not only is it difficult to get on the ballot, our key issue right now, and the reason I'm running, is that we try to retain ballot access in Alabama. And Alabama has by far the most difficult laws in order of... Our candidate... And Ruth is running against a Republican, but there's no Democrat running in the lieutenant governor's office. So any Democrat that's listening out there needs to say, vote for Ruth Page Nelson, because that's going to give you the opportunity to have a third choice or other choices in the next election. We've got 65 candidates on the ballot, more than the Democrats, I think. Of those, 50 are running against only a Republican mm-hmm. or only a Democrat. So if there wasn't the Libertarian candidate on there, that's 50 positions in the state where there would not be a general election. It would be, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans have colluded. That's why we call them the duopoly party. They've colluded. You get this seat, we get this seat. You know, nothing changes. It's, you know, there's very little competition. There's very few choices that people have. And so, you know, my push is that Ruth Page Nelson is the one that takes us over the line and gets us ballot access for the next two election cycles, which I'm hoping folks will get out there and support her very heavily.
Yeah, this is a question. Well, and I was going to ask, I've asked this before of John, so I'll ask this of y'all, because you say this, what's going to happen next and next? So folks go to vote Libertarian. You know what they hear? You're wasting your vote. Right, you're wasting your vote. This is a thing that you are guaranteeing that you know, your vote's going to mean nothing. You need to get on board with somebody who's a real candidate. This is right. I mean, this is if you vote Libertarian, you've heard this before.
But the reality is, you've been voting Republican or Democrat all this time, and what's changed for the better? If you vote for Libertarians and we maintain ballot access, we are challenged to the Republicans who've been doing all that big spending to have a real honest small government party, a real honest group that says individual choice. Individuals are what's important.
So, I mean, there's a long game to this. Obviously, y'all want to win the election. You want to win the race you're in. But overall, am I hearing that what happens now begets what happens next and next and next?
That's correct. We want to definitely maintain ballot access. We want our platform to be understood. We believe that people will be happily transformed into Libertarians if they understand the platform. But number one right now is understanding how to vote. Even if you are a straight party voter, you need to just bubble me in. If you're a Democrat and you check the straight party, you won't have voted for a lieutenant gubernatorial candidate at all. Mm-hmm. You'll have the incumbent, and this is a Republican, rich, Caucasian male who has always, you know, been in this position. And we need to have someone who understands the true causes that give you liberty and justice for all of Alabama. And I believe that I'm that person. See, I ran as a Republican mm-hmm. for the U.S. Senate, and it was very obvious that my beliefs for women's rights, as a Susan B. Anthony type and a Frederick B. Douglass type, were the furthest from what was being espoused by the Alabama Republican Party. So do not, you know, lose and waste your vote. We need you to take time to look at our platform, but also to make sure that you vote for a candidate for a lieutenant governor. And the way you do that is to bubble me in. You have to make a conscious choice, and those votes count. Every vote counts. If you do not vote for us, that is a lost vote. So we need to make the percentage in order to stay on this ballot and to help people understand our platform, to understand liberty for all.
And if people it's just basic fairness. I mean, we don't start at the same place the other parties do.
Right.
It's hard to recruit candidates when they don't know if they're really going to be on the ballot. We had to collect 80,000 signatures to make sure we had the 57,000 that were required, but we didn't learn that we would really be on the ballot until it was too late for us to put anybody on the ballot. That's the way the game is rigged.
So what you're saying,
never mind the fact that 300,000 that we spent to get on the ballot, we don't have to spend as candidates now, which is it's a serious issue. You're not wasting your vote. You're potentially opening up some choices for yourself in the future.
All right. Going to the news, coming right back. More of our conversation at this event coming up from 5 to 7 tonight at Cedar Creek Social Club right here in Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 1222 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Friday. And tonight from 5 to 7, is that correct? 5 to 7 for the event?
Indeed.
It is, and that's the voice of John Sophocles running for Senate, and with that L by his name here in the state of Alabama. I want to kind of go through a couple things here. First of all, you talk about the slate of candidates. I know Jimmy talked about this a second ago, but Ruth or John, either if somebody wants to go see y'all, see what you're running for, do a little homework, where do they go?
Well, the Cedar Street Social tonight will be a forum where you'll get to meet candidates. Our big.
I know on your webpage for Libertarian Party, there's like a here's who's running sheet.
Yes, we're all there.
And Vote Liberty Alabama, www.VoteLibertyAlabama. You have .com.
Yep.
I'm sorry. and we have plenty of individual websites. The LPA for Alabama .org is a great website where you get to see, you know, all the 60 some odd candidates. I think there's some are iffy whether or not the Secretary of State will still allow them on with all the battles that are going on there. But it will be something close to 65 candidates they can look at on the Libertarian Party of Alabama website.
So y'all could see folks in person tonight, but also go do your homework.
Correct.
Online. Let's talk about this because we just talked about kind of state issues, right? In state, what a Libertarian in office would mean for the state. You're running for federal office, U.S. Senate. What does an Alabama Libertarian mean for the Senate?
Well, we've kind of, and this is a shout-out to one of my favorite local Libertarians, Dick Coffey, who was a big fan of Section 35 of the Alabama Code, which will sound familiar if you know the U.S. Constitution. It says, the sole object and only legitimate end of government is to protect the citizens in the enjoyment of life, liberty, and property, and when the government assumes other functions, it's usurpation and oppression. I find that just spot on in explaining what a libertarian's all about, straight from our state constitution. I spent a lot of time across the state with my pocket constitution. I know this is radio, and
got one in here.
Yeah, that's right. I've got a face for radio. Well, I wish I could show this to you, but
yours is fancier than mine. Look at that. Mine's like a just printed stapled thing. Look at that.
When folks say, you know, I'd like you to consider this or that, Sean, I say, great. Tell me Article X, Section Y, Clause Z, where I'm authorized to do it, and I'm all ears. Well, the silence is deafening on the other end of the phone, or that RCA Victor Dog look you see when doing it in person. They say, well, nobody answers that way. Well, Sean, if that's not the way to answer, what is?
Well, yeah, and it's in your accurate. But the problem is the machine has given us an idea that you got to tell me what you're going to, and y'all are, we're on the same page for liberty. But you got to give me, you know, people are in the habit of, what are you going to give me? How are you going to go fix this thing and change this thing? And they don't want to hear liberty as an answer.
No, what we're going to do is to make sure that you have the opportunity to make the best choice for you and your family at all times without the interference of government. We will protect your Second Amendment gun rights. We will not interfere with those. All of those laws or federal gun laws are not even legal. Women's rights, ending mass incarceration, which is a major platform of the existing government, utilizing it as a means of economic development for the state, building prisons. We want you to understand that your freedoms will be protected. The libertarians are not taking them away. We believe in the use of we're legalized. I believe cannabis should be legal. You can use any substance as long as you're not hurting others or that it is interfering in a way. So we are bringing you those freedoms that have been taken from you that you thought you were getting because of the other platform. We are guaranteeing those freedoms. Big time right now is women's rights. I bring that. My opponent does not. Look at your choices.
I want to talk about, yeah, this is the thing thrown out so many times, the marijuana thing. And people talk about that. Now, your idea here, I mean, it's illegal on the federal registry. It bothers me to no end because I am a rule of law person, and I don't get how it's illegal in the federal level when you have states that are, you know, in recreational marijuana. It seems like those two things can't exist. I think that they've got a situation where Congress can have its cake and eat it too. But if they removed it at a federal level and remanded it to the states, wouldn't you believe that it would be something state by state to vote on? Or?
And that's absolutely how it's supposed to take place.
Versus saying, hey, the federal, it's you know, we're going to push this the whole way down.
All federal laws with respect to drugs and all that are unconstitutional. And back to the Constitution, the enumerated powers were put there for a reason. When the federal government wanted to have the war on alcohol, what did we do? We amended the Constitution. We had the 18th Amendment. Everybody got to see the change, how absurd it was. Well, after we witnessed how stupid it was for the central government to be involved in that, what did we do with the Constitution again?
Yeah, we amended it.
We amended it, the 18th Amendment, to get rid of it. So if you want to do a lot of these foolish things, okay, follow the rule of law you're talking about and do it at the federal level. What Ruth is talking about is what would you observe at those state levels? And you're absolutely right, Sean. You'll have 50 different state experiments deciding what the optimal level.
Which is one of the geniuses of our republic, isn't
Amen.
It?
Amen.
You know, if we get these laboratories.
Those are freedoms.
Yes, absolutely. All right. We've got about a minute left here. So once again, tonight the event, 5 to 7. Cover to get in, free to get in. What's the situation?
Everyone's invited. No.
You mean not the libertarian idea of making this a, you know, economic, you know, generator? No, it's free to get in? Okay.
It's
no.
Free. Please come.
All right. That is tonight from 5 to 7, Cedar Creek Social Club. And once again, to get, you know, I got three of y'all in here, but that leaves, like you said, another 62 folks for people to get acquainted with.
Indeed.
Go online to check that out.
At the LPA.org, and absolutely a lot of candidates will be here tonight. See them in person.
All right. Just get up close and personal.
Right. And you can learn more about me at ruthforus.com.
See? So that, Ruth actually knows how to promote herself. We got to get John on that. All right. We got 30 seconds here.
Point, and it's a good one that everybody says, what's the government going to do for me? Mm-hmm. Well, the government can't do anything for you or give you anything unless it steals it from somebody else. So if we're talking about basic human morality, the notion of government giving things to anybody, special groups or just regular old folks, it's all stolen money, folks. If you didn't earn it yourself, the government only gets it by stealing it.
There's the closer from Dr. Jimmy Blank, and we appreciate it. We'll be talking more between now and November. Remind you about that event tonight coming up at 5 o'clock. All right, coming right back, Dale Leach from LandApp joins me.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And thank you for all the text there. I've told you all in the past, I had this the Bible talks about the prodigal son, so the criticisms. So Adam, who's a good person, but he said, Sean, it's Cedar Street, not Cedar Creek. Yes, so I said it both ways during the interview. And does that maybe describe a little bit about me? So I have spent time in both. The Cedar Street Social Club. I was just there, actually, not long ago. My daughter opened up for a band down there. It was kind of cool. I was down there for that. Do things during Mardi Gras. We're down there for an event just about 6 months ago. And Cedar Creek, that's up coming off the Mobile River. I've spent time on that, too. So, Adam, I'm one of those people that spent time in both the Cedar Street Social Club and Cedar Creek. One place I run lines for catfish. One place I may drink Coors Light. So there you go. Let's say hello to our friend Dale Leach from LandApp, LandAppMobile.com, Man About Town. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean.
So I leave town for a week. Okay. I had to go to Washington. I leave town for a week. And what happens in our budget debate in the city of Mobile? Everything was going to be fine. There weren't going to be any issues. You said just some mild issues. And then I come back and we've got issues about money for Alta Point, money for, you know, moving money from here to there. What's going on here?
Well, the Alta Point thing came up as kind of a surprise to me. That was an amendment that Scott Jones introduced that, by the way, didn't pass. But the idea was to Alta Point gets a $600,000 performance contract from the city, and the duty and their duties and part of that performance contract are what they do with indigent care from the probate court. So if somebody's involuntarily committed for legal reasons, Alta Point takes them in and does whatever it is that they do for those patients. So, you know, there's been, we've discussed it, we've written stories right. about it, that there has been sort of a movement to kind of check, I guess, to check, maybe bring more accountability to AltaPoint in what they do and how they're, and, you know, how they run their services. And part of that is opening up some of their funding avenues to other caregivers, and one of those caregivers is Veterans Recovery Resources, which does a lot of the same things that AltaPoint does on a much much smaller scale, but does it for, you know, families, first responders, veterans, and their families. So that is what Scott Jones, I think, was after, was trying to put somebody else in control of that money, not take it away from mental health, but provide a mental health, sort of like a mental health fund that the city would then control and would dole out as they see fit. And that did not pass. There was a record number of my favorite things of all time is abstentions.
Oh, I know.
there were three abstentions among the council. Two people voted no. Two people voted in favor of letting AltaPoint keep the money. And then Scott Jones voted against, or no. I don't remember. It may have been 2-2 and then 3. That's how it is. Yeah, there were 2-4, 2 against, and 3 abstentions. And again, I want to, you know, plead with elected officials that let's use abstentions the way they're meant to be used. Abstentions are mainly for, you know, if you have a conflict of interest and you don't believe you should vote on something, then you can abstain. Don't abstain because, you know, you don't want to vote for or against something you find controversial. Either vote no or vote yes. I just don't like abstentions, and I know that's been a, you know, talking point for this newspaper specifically.
Yeah, you and I have been talking about it for a long time. And what you said, people hear that. If it is, I think we've said this before, if I was on the council and there was some vote dealing with FM Talk 106.5, that's when I would use an abstention, right? I can't.
Correct.
But if it's something that I'm not crazy about either way, that's the tough part of it, but that's my job to vote one way or the other.
Yeah. That's what you're in that spot for. We don't have the prolific abstainers we've had in the past. On the council, but I was taken aback with 3 abstentions on one vote. So there was, you know, there was that. That was probably the big headline grabbing issue. Probably the thing everybody led with if they wrote about it was that AltaPoint sort of dodged this attempt to take money away from them and put it in a more central location. But there were other amendments to the mayor's proposed budget before it was passed, and these were all amendments that the city council worked on with the mayor's office to kind of make it amenable. You know, we had talked previously about Councilman Ben Reynolds suggesting that we take money from the Office of Professional Responsibility, which is a new office that was built upon funds from positions that the city hall had not filled. So it was sort of like. So they put that in the budget to sort of create the new department, and Ben Reynolds wanted to kind of curb that a little bit, and take that money away, and go back and you know, go through the council and build the department that way. But that change to OPR was taken out of potential amendments last week before the council voted on the budget, and we saw $1 million. Added for ditch maintenance, taken from somewhere else. We saw $200,000 given in a performance contract to Ransom Ministries for the work they're doing with homeless individuals and litter pickup, the jobs that they're creating through that program. That's going to be extended and increased going forward. And I actually spent the morning with those gentlemen this morning, picking up trash and talking to them. So we'll have a story in next week's Lanyap about that, about my experiences with that and about their, and more importantly, about their experiences. So be watching for that when it comes up. So those were the big items that came up with the that came up through the budget before it was passed. But we have now passed the budget. It's not October 1st yet, and we have a budget, so we're all good.
Yeah, because that's been the big question, right? Because it, you know, sometimes as we get into late August, getting into September, it's not always a sure thing where we'll end up on that. And by the way, side note, I can't wait to read that because I have Matt Armbruster's been on the show with me before talking about what they do with Ransom Ministries. We were talking back then about the where they take the electronics and we donate electronics from here to them to break down there. But so now they're picking up litter. So those folks are doing that as well.
They're picking up litter. I was out with them on Shelton Beach Road. We walked the whole road from Moffitt to Bear Creek.
Bear Fork.
Oh, God, I don't want to.
Bear Fork Road.
People are going to text you. Bear Fork?
Yeah, it's Bear Fork Road. Yeah,
from Moffitt to Bear Fork. So I got Creek in my head. Thanks, Sean. I'm going to blame you for that. So
please
we walked the whole length of that. It was like 2 miles. It was great. It was a beautiful morning to do that, and we picked up trash along the way. So, yeah, I'll have stories about that. So just keep watching for him.
Good deal. Before we wrap up, too, another story since I've been gone. This is, okay, you can lay out the story here, but it is, you know, I've been talking to folks about this, that the process here for medical marijuana in the state, and I was somebody who was supportive of the bill, but it has become Byzantine in the process. And, you know, Director McMillan comes on with me, he talks through it and all that, but it's not like we're, yes, medical marijuana will be legal, but only certain people will be able to participate in it, right? And I mean, you have a story about Daphne and Foley approving medical dispensaries in their cities, but that doesn't mean they get them, right? I mean,
right. Well, I mean, I think we can all safely assume that the more popular places. So you talk about Byzantine. We're only allowed as a state to have 38 dispensaries throughout the entire state.
Isn't that silly?
So there's your first. It's kind of anti-capitalist,
yep,
to put a number on the number of private businesses that people can have. But there it is what it is. So you can have 38 total through a number of different avenues, different licenses that the state gives out. But, yeah, Foley and Daphne passed resolutions that would allow them. And unlike other state laws, this is the only one where a city, instead of a city opting out of something in the state law, they actually have to opt in on this. It's completely backwards of the way things are supposed to work. But there were things they had to do to get people that were against it to vote for it. So I understand some of that. That's fine. But yeah, you expect the big cities, Mobile, Montgomery, Huntsville, Birmingham, to all have dispensaries, of course. But you start to get to the smaller cities, at some point we're gonna run out of available, allotted dispensaries. So I think these smaller cities are really trying to get out in front of it. And in the case of Foley, I know that they had at least one company come out or come to them. City administrator told me this, that they had a company, Osteo Labs, come out and ask them to do this so that they could possibly have a dispensary down the road. I don't know where they are in the process of getting that done. I think we've got till the end of the year, basically, for everybody to kind of request an application, get that application in, and then send it back to the state. So yeah, we're still a long way from actually seeing dispensaries pop up. But I mean, you're going to see Fairhope's already discussed it. You're going to see Fairhope vote on it soon. I've heard the city of Mobile is going to be doing it fairly soon. So you're going to see more and more of this, and we're going to report on all of them.
Yeah. Speaking of reporting on things, you're probably ahead of me on this, but if you looked at, I mean, there's a fee for your initial application, and then the fees if you get selected. This is significant money to see if you're going to get in.
I don't remember exactly what the fees are, but yeah, there's an application fee. There's a fee at every level, and you're not even guaranteed to apply.
Yeah, it doesn't mean you get it.
You can apply, but you're not guaranteed a spot, license, even if you do pay the money for the application. Now, I'm not going to say that. I don't know if any of that is refundable if you don't get. I don't think it would be.
No, it's not. I asked about that.
Okay.
And so Director McMillan was saying, and there's part of it makes sense that there's cost with operating this, right? There's cost with getting the filings and all that stuff. But that second, the tier two, was the bigger money. And I was like, holy cow, somebody is going to have to risk a lot here to see if they get it.
And we're not even talking about, like, the security that's going to be involved. You've got to have monitored 24/7 security. You've got to have an enclosed structure just to grow the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about, you know, agriculture is a big part of the state, and the margins are getting thinner and thinner by the year. And we're having these hemp farmers who want to turn to medical marijuana or medical cannabis. We're having them, do all this stuff ahead of getting an application in, with no guarantee that they're going to be approved. We're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars in just prep. I'm not even talking about license fees. I'm talking about prep in order to get your facility up and running, to get an application, to fill out that application, and not even maybe even get approved.
Right.
There is a lot of overhead that goes into it before you even know if you're in the business yet. And then on top of that, it's going to be so – there are issues. Like they had a longer list of participating ailments, right?
Yeah.
And that was slowly chopped down by the legislature. And you know, you got to do what you got to do to pass it. I understand that. But there was a longer list of ailments that got chopped down. It's still a pretty long list, but I mean, it's the main ones are depression, cancer, things like that. I think chronic pain is on the list too. So it's a long list of things, but it's not nearly as long as it is. And the shorter that list gets, the less money is in it for the business owner that's trying to do this, and for the farmers specifically. And you got farmers who've already been stretched pretty thin on the margins to this point. So it's going to be a hard sell to get some of those guys to do it. And I've talked to a lot that say they want to see what happens before they get involved. They may wait a year or two. And I think there's a big fear that, like, conglomerates will come in and get a stake in a local business and then just kind of take over the whole process. I hope that doesn't happen, but that has been a concern.
Yeah, I think it has to be like 51% Alabama owned.
I would come back to this in a second.
Have you heard talk about the ailments? Have you heard the Tommy Chong story from way back when in California?
No, I have not heard
So when Tommy Chong. They went medical marijuana there, and so Tommy Chong goes in, who I've actually interviewed decades ago.
Okay.
He comes into the doctor. So the story goes. He comes in the doctor. The doctor says, well, what's your ailment? And he has anxiety. He said, I have anxiety. And the doctor said, what do you have anxiety about? He said, not having any weed. And so it could or could not be true. I don't know. Somebody go to Snopes and see if that's true. But, you would have an easier time if I was a member of the legislature saying, here are some conditions that the science isn't so solid on about medical marijuana, than you would saying, we're going to limit only certain people get to be part of this. And this is, I mean, it's almost analog to the gambling discussion in Alabama, that we say, okay, we're going to legalize something, but we're going to limit who can be in part of this, right? Only certain people.
I mean, we're talking about a legislature that is made up of a supermajority of Republicans who typically preach, limited government.
Mm-hmm.
And then here we are just making it, just putting all sorts of limitations on something just because, traditionally it hasn't been something that they've been a fans of.
We'll watch where this goes. If there's, the first year of it is, goes well, do they have an addendum and more people come in? I don't know. Be interesting.
I don't know either. I hope that they, I hope they're not done looking into this. After they've passed it, I hope that they, if it's successful and you don't see, the problems that they're afraid you're going to see with it, I hope we see something happen. I talked to Robin Lejeune, the mayor of Daphne, who is who's got stage 3 colon cancer, and he said, he's become a lot more passionate about this issue of medical marijuana as he's watched patients in the cancer treatment centers that he's been in, what they've gone through. He's like, he hasn't really gone through the same as some of the other patients, but he's watched them and it's really opened his eyes. And so he was very passionate about Daphne passing this, and there was no opposition. So that's good.
That is good. All right, Dale, tell folks if they have forgotten or never knew how to pick up a copy of Lagniappe or how to get it online. What do they need to do?
If you want to get a hard copy of the paper, it is in our purple boxes all over town, in our racks all over town. But the best way to get Lagniappe is to subscribe online at lagniappemobile.com. You'll get a digital copy of the paper. You'll get all the latest breaking news and sports stories that we have on, and we have the largest writing staff we've ever had. So that's, we have an issue right now where we've got a lot of stuff coming in, so you don't want to miss it. So please subscribe. Check us out online, lagniappemobile.com, and we'd appreciate it.
All right, Dale, as always, I appreciate our conversations. Look forward to next week.
Thank you, yes. Talk to you then, Sean.
All right, there goes. Dale Leach, Lagniappe, lagniappemobile.com, and we're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. Ran late, of course. It's okay. Got another hour of Midday Mobile on the way. Looking at one of my monitors in here with the approach of Hurricane Ian into South Carolina. Hey, if you want to hit me up on the text line, if you're in the insurance business, right? I've talked about this in the past, what it would mean if you had a storm that didn't just kind of hit at a 90, right? Like they do here on the Northern Gulf Coast. If it swept down coastlines that are like the east coast of Florida or the Atlantic coast of the Carolinas, where you have such a density of very expensive real estate. And if it takes that, where it doesn't just, the swath's not just 25 miles, that it's hundreds and hundreds. And what are people saying in the insurance world? The private insurance, I'm not even talking about the federal response here. I mean, will they be able to handle it? What are you going to see from that? Y'all got some inside track on that? I'm curious. Let me know. 343-0106. My buddy Joe Savage joins us here in a couple minutes. More Midday Mobile on the way.